theatre, isn't it? It's not there. Hello, this is Richard Ayoade, masquerading as Mark with Skinny Media, here to talk to Jason Statham, that guy from the Crank and Transporter films.
All right, Richard, you slag. And you don't know me. You're a bat.
Oh, really? I mean, I was supposed to. Did you sign up for your HSBC Global Money account with no fees?
What? And I got cunt written all over it at my forehead, have I?
I apologize. We beg to differ. That was just a little bit of a twist for the audience out there. But as usual, Skinny Media and then Bobatron. Here to do one about espionage, James Bond, Mission Impossible, in overall spy movies. So we had to hide our identities through these hilarious profile photos of the guy from the IT crowd and Travel Man, and then Mr. Crank himself. How do you do, Rob?
Can't complain. I'm as good as always. I'm not shaken nor stirred. So
Right.
all good. And I'm in case you're wondering, yes, I do accept this mission to talk about spy movies.
Indeed, there, Mr. Bond, because I won't expect you to die, but I will expect you to talk about Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1.
Okie dokie. Well, it is a freaking good film. Anyone who follows me on Facebook would see my review saying it was awesome because the film is 2 3/4 hours long, which makes you think, "Oh, I better get comfortable." But good grief, you don't notice it. It just flies by. It's the same effect with John Wick Chapter 4 earlier this year, which is about the same length in time, and you don't notice it because, well, I mean, a film. Say, I always said a film as long as it needs to be, and a good film will always justify its runtime. And then both, just like John Wick 4, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning does justify its runtime because it is just that good.
I'll probably take your word for it. Now, I'm speaking for myself. I've never seen any of the MI films or the TV show that it was based on. My mother has seen the original TV series, so I'll take her word for it. But they definitely look like they amped up on the action scenes, and probably more so the sort of heavy crunch blow violence, even though the earlier Mission Impossible films, like first one was PG. Which I remember you saying through personal
Well,
calls that was a strong PG.
it was a PG-13 in America. It's a very typical 90s PG where it was only PG because 12 was still restricted, which is weird because the BBFC have re-rated it PG recently. I just don't understand why because it is a very yeah, it is because I was thinking if released today it would be a 12A and a very solid one because it's actually technically more violent than most of the other ones. Was the later ones.
Oh, blimey. Ooh. No, but that has happened. I mean, can we get started about Jaws and Princess Mononoke for a second? There's been strong PGs.
Well, we
Then
could talk about any old
MI2.
school PGs. Well, Mission Impossible 2, that
The
was a
15.
PG-13 in America. It was a 15 in Britain, but if you've got the ability to do that, if you look it up on IMDb and read the alternative versions, you realize that while it was cut in America for its PG-13 rating, when it was sent over here, it was that cut footage was left back in. Evidently, John Woo, the director, realized that in order to get the equivalent 12 rating, he would have to cut more footage, and he just didn't want to do that. So he just gave us a fully uncut version. That wasn't the first time he had done that, actually, because his first Hollywood film, Hard Target, which was cut in America to get an R rating, was sent completely uncut around the world and just given its 18 rating.
Well, if you think that the BBFC looks like a bunch of wieners, well, I'm guessing the MPAA does look like a real big bunch of wieners themselves.
Well, I
They
mean,
say they can
yeah,
handle
but like I
violence,
said,
and they can't.
but like I was saying though, if they wanted to get the equivalent rating out, the BBFC, they probably would have had to put down even more cuts. So, yeah, that's why it was just given uncut with whatever rating the BBFC gave it.
Well, I'll take your word for it because I haven't seen them. But, really unusual classification history. I mean, since number three, with the Philip Seymour Hoffman as the villain, they've all been 12 A's. But, I've never really seen, in at least my lifetime, the first one being a PG, and then it jumped to 15, and then vice versa. That's almost unheard of, at least from my perspective. Except, you know, sometimes you'll get TV shows like Friends and stuff that'll be like, PG, 15, 15, 12, 12,
12, PG, 15. There's no one Friends episodes that read 15.
The DVDs or the VHS tapes, I remember back in the day, it was sort of like jump three ratings and then jump a rating back, jump up. It was like
I remember playing Friends ones being 12s, but of course with televised but with the videos of television series that can just happen because if one episode gets a higher rating, they then got to like apply that for that whole season.
No, that is true. I mean, Buffy and Angel and all those TV shows can claim they're a victim of that. Even to some extent, I was going to say Game of Thrones.
Oh, no, sorry, you're wrong. There is one episode 17 of season 4 was given a 15 rating, but yeah, that's it.
All right. Well, I'll reel it back in for everyone. Sorry we talked a little bit about Friends and stuff, because I'll be there for you. But we'll talk about how we always start everything off with your experience with spy or espionage films growing up. I'm sure it was probably a James Bond, or maybe like spy comedy.
No, I was going to just say, it was quite the bleeding obvious, but yeah, obviously it was James Bond.
I think any British person of a certain age can certainly attest to that.
Well, it is the most famous, the most popular spy or secret agent franchise there is.
Absolutely. And it's not without its controversy, of course, which we'll get to in a moment. But what is the first Bond film you've seen? Now, given your age and stuff, it's very likely it's probably like a Pierce Brosnan title, like The World's Not
When
Enough.
When you say
"Come On, Never Dies."
Well, do you mean at the cinema or on TV?
Either or.
At the cinema, it was Tomorrow Never Dies. Yeah, that was the first Bond film that I saw because I was 10 when GoldenEye came out. And I could have probably passed for 12 because obviously it's back when 12 was still restricted, but I didn't, to be honest, I actually wasn't that interested in watching a Bond film at the cinema because I didn't mind Bond films, I always found it dragged on a bit as a kid. I don't think they do anymore, but but the first one was Tomorrow Never Dies, and I really enjoyed it. So that was a 12. Apparently it was cut to avoid some I don't know if it was cut just to avoid a 15 or it was like actually mandatory cuts because there was some use of shuriken in there, which of course this was released under James Furman, who had a complete blanket ban on those.
Oh, like those blade things that people throw.
Yeah, ninja stars.
Oh yeah, a lot of that was happening with martial arts censorship, censoring ninchakus, sort of double claps, headbutts. It, ridiculous as it may seem back then, it was a problem because kids could copy it, but that's really up but for no, yeah, but history to decide.
Well, the BBFC have moved on; they don't really care about that shit anymore. I mean, it's not exactly a secret that back then, or news to anyone that back then the BBFC are a bit more pearl clutchy than they are nowadays.
Yeah, no shit, Sherlock. Well, from my experience, my first James Bond film is actually not Casino Royale. It's Die Another Day, which I saw on TV. Got a VHS at Choices or Blockbuster. Wasn't quite 12 years old. I know, guilty.
What a great movie to start with.
Well, I'll put it this way. Someone wanted to get the VHS because it had Halle Berry in it. I never had feelings for Halle Berry, but this person obviously did. He wanted to have a little bit of a wank towards her. And I unfortunately saw it kind of says sort of masturbation fodder. And I thought, oh. So that's why I don't have very positive memories of the James Bond films. Although, in all retrospective, Pierce Brosnan and Daniel Craig are the two ones I can sort of relate to. One, because I used to live not too far away where they filmed a lot of the James Bond movies in Leavesden, which is not too far from Watford. Two, I always found Pierce Brosnan to be the epitome of British masculinity, especially with the sins and saying like this. Even though he's an Irish fella, he always sounds...
I was going to say, he's Irish.
Everyone was like shaken, not stirred. I mean, Timothy Dalton, you know, he kicks ass. I actually envy these lads because I wish I did look like James Bond. But I know that's getting on personal matters. But in all fairness, I didn't really see James Bond growing up. I felt it was a bit more adult than what I could handle. And it never had quite the appeal to me. I think if you're of a certain age, let's say 40 plus, chances are you're probably going to be a Bond fan. And Casino Royale was kind of that sort of key point in my life that I sort of recognized, oh, I didn't know James Bond was going to be that heavy. Because I was 13, 14 when I saw it. And let's just say it was a bit of a rude awakening because of that torture scene, which some people felt was kind of erotic or kinky. I just found it was quite disturbing. I thought it was one of the most violent 12A films I ever saw. And I know you might disagree with me on that, but even in its censored version, it should not have been 12.
Well, I mean, like I say, that's a matter of opinion and everything. Obviously, there was a reason why Casino Royale was what it was. Just like the previous year's Batman Begins, they are trying to bring these franchise back to sort of gritty roots after films like Batman and Robin and Die Another Day. They started the whole trend of gritty reboots of basically bringing a film back to series back to basics after it had jumped the shark a little too much. But that's neither in about. I mean, in terms of like, Tomorrow Never Dies was the first Bond film I saw at the cinema, and I can't remember, I have no idea which was the first Bond film I saw ever on TV. I mean, I remember watching Sean Connery's Never Say Never Again one or two times. Obviously, that's not the official canon. I'll get if I can remember which. Because obviously, I mean, most Bond films are released way before I was born. So, of course, I probably would have seen the first Bond I would have watched was when I was too young to remember. So, I mean, I wouldn't have really absorbed any information about it.
I suppose that. I mean, you know, a lot of films that I saw growing up that I hold in high regard, like Beetlejuice, which I probably shouldn't have been seeing that young, I had foggy memories of until, you know, just recently that I can sort of remember and put the puzzle together. But in my experience with Bond movies, regardless of any ratings, I think it's more of a generational thing because millennials don't quite connect with James Bond, unless you're talking about Daniel Craig or perhaps Pierce Brosnan. You know, it's mostly like boomers, Silent Generation, and maybe some Gen Xers who sort of connect with the franchise a hell of a lot more.
Well, boomers would have been there for the original when it started. I mean, my mum said she, and I think my dad did, I don't know, they're boomers and, well, older boomers, as in they were born in the 40s. Bear in mind, just for anyone doesn't know, boomers are 1946 to 1964. So, of course, my parents said that, at least my mum did anyway, that she saw a Dr. No at the cinema. And she said she saw the next two from Russia with Love and Goldfinger, but they weren't too sure about Thunderball. So they saw them at the cinema. And of course, my mum always found Sean Connery the best Bond. And I think he is as well, actually. Well, at least I much prefer him to Roger Moore. But of course, they had some trouble with the BBFC back then as well. I mean, the reason why Sean Bean's character in GoldenEye is called Alec Trevelyan is because he's named after a BBC chairman, John Trevelyan, at the time in the 60s, who they found to be quite troublesome to deal with.
What? Now you make me want to go see GoldenEye. I didn't know that was one of the reasons for the characters' names there. That's hilarious. But in all fairness, a lot of these films were A certificate or PG. Now, with that being said, it's a bit strange from a distancing effect because James Bond movies, in my opinion, do not appeal to children, do not appeal to families. They appeal to 40 plus.
And they kind of appeal to kids and everything. The whole sort of secret spy who's taking on a megalomaniacal supervillain who's trying to take over the world. I mean, a lot of the bad guys in Bond films are kind of like set the template for cartoon supervillains from the 80s and 90s that I grew up watching. I mean, Blofeld being the most obvious example. But on the subject of film ratings, I think most of them were A ratings. Apparently, Thunderball was cut to get its A rating. Not for any of the violence. Apparently, it's a scene where Bond is rubbing this woman back with a mink glove. And I do not understand that one bit, but I mean...
Well, it might be obviously a fetish S&M element to it.
Well, I think John Trevelyan saw it that way. They feared that guy was a little bit sexually sensitive and would just cut stuff if it gave him a boner. And of course, he might have got a boner a little bit too easily. But I mean, obviously, all subsequent re-releases of Thunderball were uncut and released with... the PG ratings, I think. Although Diamonds Are Forever was cut for its A and now was still cut at PG and there's now an uncut 12 rating. Probably for the best. I mean, let's face it. There's probably a bit too much violence for You know, the Bond films always sort of toe that line between what you consider a family-friendly action flick and just going a little bit into a bit too much of a gritty action style.
Oh, I would certainly agree to that with the Bond films that I have seen. I mean, Casino Royale and License to Kill are the two big offenders, but Quantum of Solace had some questionable scenes. One of them, there was, I think, attempted rape, and you see a woman's coochie. And that was a 12A stick. I thought, wow.
Well, I know some stuff was cut out of Quantum of Solace for its 12 rating. I mean, according to IMDb. In fact, of all the five Daniel Craig Bond films, I think Skyfall and No Time to Die are the only two that got away with uncut 12As. So make of that what you will.
Well, actually, I believe that. I mean, in my experience, I've only seen Quantum of Solace and Casino Royale, but I've seen some of those questioned clips from Spectre, and I thought, oh... Yeah, it certainly veers on 15 end of things. I mean, there's even eye gouging and a scene where a needle pricks into his head. And that was painful to watch. I'm sure it was for a lot of the audience who was watching out there. I know...
Well, that's true. Bearing in mind, could you imagine if it did rate it 15 and meaning parents couldn't take their kids to see it?
Well, we've seen that already unfold with License to Kill, and it was a box office failure for the franchise, so where they had to delay it for so long.
How would parents have reacted if they couldn't take their kids to see a Bond film? They wouldn't be too happy, would they?
Not really, but, you know, I'm coming from a little bit of a different angle here, because I've never really viewed Bond movies as sort of family affairs. They've always been a bit more adult than what the audiences intended. But I guess if you want the big bucks, you got to go PG or 12A.
Or PG-13 in America. That's true. I mean, Bond. Most people do see the Bond film as a family-friendly action affair. Sure, they're a little bit... they are slightly scary and slightly put near to the knuckle than, you know, your typical Marvel fare or your Transformers films or Pirates of the Caribbean or... Well, I'm drawing a blank and thinking of other ones, but that sort of stuff. Well, some Marvel films can be quite violent, but due to the fantastical nature of them, of those films, that the violence is kind of really loses its impact. With the exception of Strange 2, but what'd you say?
Because from my perspective, the Bond films generally tend to be a bit more realistic and, crunchy blows. There's also that a bit of sexualization where he's, the dancing woman in the opening credits with the "he's the man with the Midas touch" gold finger, and
Yeah,
just sort
it's
of other
weird.
general chaos.
Probably some Bond films are slightly more grounded than others. I mean, there's a reason why Roger Moore did For Your Eyes Only in 1981, because the last one he did before that was Moonraker, which was an absolutely ridiculous Bond movie that just tried to ape Star Wars but didn't really fit the mold. And Christ, it was just that was just bad.
Most people I've
But just
talked
really
to.
speaking of. Speaking of Marvel films, I mean, I know it sounds like a quite superhero, but have you seen Captain America: Winter Soldier?
I'm afraid not, but I have heard that film deals with espionage
It's
elements and political surveillance.
yeah, I mean, obviously Captain America is going to be that, and there's Black Widow as well, when the film came out 2 years ago. Those two characters are going to probably deal in more of a ground level political thriller type stuff, and I suppose espionage and political thrillers are going to kind of cross over quite a bit when you think about it.
Oh, definitely. I
Because
mean,
right now on Disney Plus, well, on Disney Plus, Marvel have also released Secret Invasion, which is dealing with that sort of subject matter as well. I mean, sure. I mean, it's about like an alien race infiltrating humanity's ranks, so it's not be taken too seriously, but it's like a Bourne film or a Tom Clancy Jack Ryan film and everything. And of course, we can't talk about espionage. Well, we can't talk about espionage, right? But we probably won't without mentioning the Bourne films. The first Bourne Identity being the first film to get the 12A rating.
I was there when it came out. Oh man, it makes me feel old thinking about that. But I mean, you were almost
I mean,
into adulthood when that film came out.
yeah, okay. I became adult the next year.
So it didn't have quite the impact. But I remember trying to ask my mother if I
Yeah.
could watch it, but it proved to be a little bit difficult. But I got my way at the end.
Always find just we're talking about how ironic it was because the 12A was brought in because of the backlash to Spider-Man, because parents wanted to take their kids to see this cheesy, light-hearted action flick, and rightfully so. I mean, sure, they should be allowed to see that. And of course, they couldn't at the time. So of course, they brought in the 12A, and of course, they give it to this film about a PTSD-ridden spy who stabs someone in the hand with a biro.
I know that's quite a leap. I mean, they're both the same rating, but let's all face it, Jason Bourne is the stronger one out of the two. It doesn't really have the
Obviously.
overt kid appeal. I mean, do you know any 10-year-olds who want to go watch Matt Damon punching bad guys with a book?
Well, a 10-year-old might, but an 8-year-old might not. Probably wouldn't.
Exactly, my point there. But yes, it was certainly, a stronger title. I remember he said on some interviews that I wonder why he was, given up each phone. He should be like a rated R film, like sort of thing, because I'm Matt Damon. I know it's a terrible impersonation,
Matt
but
Damon.
take it as you will.
The Chief of American World Police is Matt Damon.
No, either he's that or he's like a fast talking Boston knight or something. He's like, I know you're going
He's actually
to
from Boston,
have happening
though. He's
right there.
actually from Boston, though. Ben Affleck is. I don't think Matt Damon is. I mean, he does actually roll his R a bit more than, say, Ben Affleck or Mark Wahlberg or those types. But that's off topic. Just one. Because yeah, we talked about various. Apparently, along with Casino Royale, GoldenEye was another Bond film that not only was cut for its 12 rating in Britain, but it also for its PG-13 rating in America.
I'm guessing it's for scenes of violence, because on the US end of things, they did censor out Die Another Day a little bit because of the sexual content, and even
Yeah, I
Casino
forgot about that.
Royale was censored for a PG-13. Not weirdly enough, not for the torture scene. I know, go figure. But they censored some of the heavy, crunchy blows in
And
that
that
black and white opening
machete
sequence.
fight scene. And a machete fight scene in the stairwell.
Nope, you're right there, which I've always found that a little bit weird upon reading that they had a bit more issue with the blows and the machete than they did the torches thing. I would have thought the other way.
Yeah, we discussed this on our first podcast with Tom, where it was kind of weird because you thought that the MPA with their attitude towards sexual content would have taken more issues with the sexual nature of the torture scene later on, whereas the BBFC would have just been more about the crunchy blows or the wielding of a machete and everything, and stuff like that. But apparently, no, they always surprise us, those two firms, at times.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a few instances where the MPA has actually made us look more conservative than we actually are on certain issues. I think there was a film that I thought, oh, they're going to give this an NC-17, or you're going to have to release it unrated. But nope, they didn't. It was called Teeth, which was a horror comedy about a teenage girl who has, how do I put it this way politely? Claws up a coochie, a twat, that bite men's penises.
Yes, I have seen it.
It's a nasty movie, so don't watch it on date night. But that's just from my inference there. But I know to jump a little bit back onto things, Skyfall, which had no issues with the censorship in the US and UK. I'm sure probably did get some flack for that scene involving Silver, the Javier Bardem villain, sort of touching and caressing James Bond in a quite homosexual, erotic fashion. Oh, Mr.
It's
Bond.
quite brief. It's pretty brief.
It is, but I'm sure there's some audiences, because James Bond is very masculine. Who are probably uncomfortable by the sort of homoeroticism and playful.
You always
They should be bam.
get one or two who have who take umbrage with what's in a film. I mean, obviously, I mean, I don't know if a homosexual subtext should affect the rating, and obviously, I don't think the ratings boards think either, at least the BBFC wouldn't. And obviously, they're while people may think it should affect the rating, they're probably more likely pissed off at the what are they gonna be pissed off at the developers for adding that stuff in. But that's neither here nor there. Also, Skyfall, I found that was the first Bond film to contain an F-bomb in.
That I did read, just prior to that, I don't remember any other
And
Jason
not believe
words.
it's just weird because, like, you think, oh, a first F-bomb, that'd be in License to Kill. That's essentially just a typical Hollywood action movie that was surprised wasn't an R-rated, and then it always was. But no, okay, it's going to be in this new Daniel Craig era of Bond, the gritty ones with the heart of Bond since Connery. He's going to say it. It's like, no, he's not said. Who says it? Oh, the posh granny says it.
Well, it's a generational thing. You wouldn't expect someone who's must have been like in her 70s or 80s using that kind of language, but she did. It'd be like if my grandmother said twat. Oh, wait, she did about a few weeks ago. Oh, it kind of got red in the face because she didn't know exactly what twat meant. There were some
Well,
complaints
how
about
old
that.
is your grandmother?
84.
Okay, so hang on a second. I'm trying to think. Oh, probably the same age as Judi Dench then.
Yeah, more or less. I know if you of the silent generation, you wouldn't be using that kind of language, even in open company. But I
Well,
guess it
George Carlin
goes
was
now.
silent generation.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry, I have too many stereotypes about certain groups of people. It's like millennials. I always assume that they're obsessed with video games and student debt, just like us.
Well, a lot of them, what they've got reasons to think about the latter of that, but let's not go off topic. Of course, the only other film I've heard Bond with the F-bomb in is, of course, No Time to Die. So the two that brings us back full circle to the two Daniel Craig films that had no censorship issues whatsoever.
Exactly there. I mean, it, on some level, if the obligatory F word, that's how I refer to it as when you get 12A and PG-13 films that use it like once, sometimes even twice, it comes across as a bit cynical, really. Because there are some films that don't necessarily need it, but they're just doing it just to make themselves look a little bit more edgy. But at sometimes times, it comes across as a bit forced.
I appreciate I know what you mean. Of course, one might say just adding the one F-bomb rather than a custom out of F-bombs might actually make that single F-bomb a bit more, have more impact. And of course, a lot of times, the American producers just put the single F-bomb in there to get their PG-13 rating, which I think is what they did with Prince of Thieves, even though the film's clearly violent enough to warrant an F-bomb. But again, that's not related to what we're talking about. So we're talking about espionage. Have you seen Man from U.N.C.L.E., the film?
Yeah, that was a Guy Ritchie. I only saw it because Alicia Vikander, isn't it? But I always found Henry Cavill to be an appropriate alternative to James Bond. He very looks like one.
Yeah, well, I was thinking, obviously, the new Bond comes around. I mean, it'd be him. I mean, I know. I also think Idris Elba would be a good Bond, to be frank. He might be a bit old for it now, but yeah, Henry Cavill would be a good Bond. I always thought Gerard Butler would be, obviously he's way too old for it now, but I mean, I think Gerard Butler would be a good Bond, if only because his Scottish accent, which would bring him back to Sean Connery, and contrary to popular belief, James Bond isn't English, he's Scottish. I mean, he's still British, but yeah, he's not English, he's Scottish. Hence why that
Anglo-washing.
Yeah, even the point is that hence that scene in Skyfall, he goes up to Scotland to his home. Yeah, the whole point is that, yeah, Bond. Yeah, so of course, Gerard Butler's accent will be quite fitting. Right, Scottish, and he's got a lisp, just like Sean Connery.
You know, I've always been a bit curious about that for a long time because I've always assumed James Bond to be more or less the standard of, not Middle England, but like received pronunciation, British upper class society, working for MI5, with a pint of the old pimps after work, and going to Canary Wharf with his chums.
Ian Fleming did originally write him to be English, but after Sean Connery just aced the role, made it his own, and just totally won over everyone, Fleming retconned him to make him Scottish. And besides, I always found Scottish people sound better when they speak. When they speak in when they're well spoken and posh like it. Okay, I mean, look at Brian Cox and Ian McDermott and Richard Wilson, aka Victor Meldrew. You know, they're all Scottish people who are really well spoken and it just comes across so much better.
Gordon Brown is probably the person I'm thinking of when you're thinking of like a upper class Scotsman who, to me, doesn't really sound Scots like. Miles McInnes or Gerard Butler, totally. But I would assume that upper class Scotsman would rather not suit his arrows, but not approve an accent that sounds quite thick to English ears. Is that good?
Just think of the Emperor in Star Wars, as in Palpatine in Star Wars.
Oh, of course. It's been a while since I've seen that. Return of the Jedi and Empire Strikes Back, but I'll take your word for it. But I always assume he was sort of representative of sort of upper class British society. I think there's a weird sort of classist view about things that we have in the UK that I don't think Americans quite have the same way. And James Bond is sort of that relic of that period. I know in modern days it's less to do with the violence or some of the sexual stuff, and it has to do more with the sexualization of the female characters and some of the ethnic stereotypes that have always been a bit of a problem for the more woke-minded of us in our generations.
Well, it's very obvious that, I mean, there's been a lot of backlash to a lot of the old Sean Connery Bond films and how they just contain a bunch of values that just don't exist, don't hold up very well today. I mean, the gropy nature of Bond in a lot of and especially in Goldfinger, where he pretty much just assaults Honor Blackman's pussy galore. Then, of course, there's a scene in, was it, You Only Live Twice, where he decides to disguise himself as a Japanese man, and it's just really, really cringe how he's just essentially donning yellow face. I mean, it's maybe not quite as egregious as Mickey Rooney's character in Breakfast at Tiffany's, because the character, it's like, there's a lot of layer to it, like Robert Downey Jr.'s a character in Tropic Thunder, but yeah, there's just well, I don't want to say, man, it was made in the 60s. What the hell do you think is, yeah, but back in boomer time, I mean, they just think just merely having black people in the damn thing was progressive enough.
Well, no, not quite. But yeah, I do get what you mean. And upon seeing some of the older clips, because there you get like Cinema Sins and Honest Trailers who do sort of piss takes at the old films and whatnot, during Sean Connery and Roger Moore days, they would always sort of point out a woman being slapped as if it was kind of nothing really, or the man getting his way. I mean, that's why sometimes early growing up, I wish I was James Bond, because he has that way about with women that, you know, makes ladies fall to his arms. But
well, I hardly think you're on your own.
Outdated.
Well, I hardly think you're on your own there, Mark. The whole point of James Bond is a typical male escapist male fantasy. You know, he gets to go to exotic locations. He's irresistible. Women just beds him constantly. He gets to blow shit up. I mean, drive fancy cars. I mean, the whole point is he's just like, yeah. Again, escapist male fantasy, especially to middle-aged house dads who middle-aged Homer Simpson types who sit on the couch with a can of beer watching the game. The match, as we say in Britain.
Yeah, put on Match of the Day and watch Man United play against West Ham. Unfortunately, they'll probably lose Man United 4.
Well, to be honest, I couldn't give two shits about the football or anything, Mark. I mean, I don't really care much for sport anyway, other than when it's international games, and football is just so fucking boring. Or soccer, as the Americans call it.
I'll punch you in the face if you say soccer again. That's offensive.
Dude, I was being freaking sarcastic. On a subject, I mean, do you think the Jack Ryan, Tom Clancy films count as espionage?
Yes, even though I have never seen them, but I'm familiar with The Sum of All Fears and the Jack Ryan Shadow of the Boot. I remember seeing the posters for it, I just never seen them, but if you have, I'd like to hear your perspective on them as far as ratings and stuff are concerned. I know Jack Ryan on Amazon is much stronger in content because it's not bound to MPAA regulations and standards.
That's right. Well, I have seen quite a few. I mean, I saw Some of All Fears at the cinema. That was a standard PG-13/12. Well, probably a bit stronger in a sense that there was some heavy thematic elements, and there was one F-bomb and everything, and there's a lot of death scenes regarding a nuclear fallout and everything, and some assassinations and everything, but obviously it's kept well within that level of PG-13/12A or 12, I think it was just brought out before we changed the rating, to keep it within that
the confines.
Yeah, although to be fair, they can get away with a lot more blood than I always thought you could at 12A. I mean, they'll have a guy's throat being slashed, and of course it's always been a bit of a joke to say, oh, they've slashed a throat, but you won't see any blood and everything, but it's like, you might see him. You won't see it like gushing out the wound, but when they're on the floor you might see a bit of a puddle coming out. But then again, all right, it's 12A, not you, and you have to show something, don't you?
Well, I mean, Liam Neeson movie Unknown, which has somewhat espionage elements that went by the knuckle, quite strong violence. There was even an anime I saw a clip of called Bell. That was 12 UK, PG US. That had a scene where there was domestic violence and the father scratches.
Is that the one that came out recently that was just basically Beauty and the Beast, basically for anime?
Pretty much there. A father does domestic violence and scratches his daughter's face, and you see blood gushing out. And I thought, The MPA must have slept at the wheel on this one just a little bit. So you should be a bit more strict about that
Right.
sort of
Well,
thing.
anyway, well, any
But going
yeah.
on. But, you know, this post 9/11 America we're talking about, where you had films like The Sum of All Fears and the TV
I
show
think
24.
it may have been filmed before 9/11, but yeah.
Plays on people's paranoia.
Well, yeah. And of course, other Jack Ryan films I have seen would be Clear and Present Danger and Patriot Games. Now, Clear and Present Danger, actually, no, wait, Patriot Games came out first because Clear and Present Danger, that one's PG-13/12. That involves basically a bunch of Colombian drug lords killing someone who I think is a friend of the president. So, of course, he tries to send some covert operations to take them out, but yeah, I think it goes wrong. And then, yeah, it's, I guess it's standard affair. It just comes across as probably more intense than it is because it's so, because again, very grounded in realism. There's no fantastical elements. But yeah, there's a bit of action, spy flick. Patriot Games, not so much. Basically, that just involves Jack Ryan stopping an assassination of a royal family by the IRA, and he ends up killing one of the IRA members in the time. So Sean Bean's character vows revenge upon him. But that one is an R/15. And of course, I only really want to do a. And of course, my main interest in that movie is the fact it's got Polly Walker in it, who has played Atia in Rome.
Oh yeah, the BBC HBO miniseries. That's actually quite gruesome and explicit. But the one,
Yes,
you
but.
know, from what you told me about Patriot Games, I would have been surprised had they not passed it at least with 15 with cuts because the political content, because Irish UK relations were quite awful. In the 90s, pre Good Friday Agreement. I don't know when it exactly came out, but I'm sure some of the controversy behind some of the politics of that film would have one way or another got on Daily Mail or Guardian headlines.
Well, I mean, possibly, but I don't think they're going to cut something just for political reasons. Or at least one would hope they wouldn't. I mean, they've had stuff like that come to the fore fray, into the fray before, and they've been asked not to, like with the film International Guerrillas, where they were, which was basically involved about Islamist plot kill, which involves a basically Islamist propaganda about killing Salman Rushdie, but and Salman Rushdie told him not to ban it. Probably going to mess up the whole free speech argument, but again, that's off topic. I'm just trying to think what other espionage films there are. I saw Bridge of Spies recently with Tom Hanks in, but to be honest, I can't remember much about it. So, oh, there's Red Sparrow I saw recently as well. You seen that?
Only clips of it. I know it's got quite a reputation with BBFC nerds like us because of how violent and graphic it gets at
Well, it's more.
15.
Well, that's the thing. It was cut for its 15. There's a grotting scene quite early on in the movie that had to be toned down for its 15 rating. It would have been uncut at 18, but yeah, the movie was that scene was cut for its 15. I have of course seen it in its uncut forms. I watched it on Disney Plus. I mean, yeah. I just thought the film was too damn long, to be honest. I mean, it wasn't as interesting as it could be, but it is quite intense. But again, it's about freaking espionage. I mean, if you want to get the nitty-gritty of it, you're going to be dealing with some pretty harsh stuff. I mean, there's also that also on Disney Plus is that TV show The Americans, which features KGB agents infiltrating America, I think in the 80s.
That I am familiar with, because I used to air on FX a lot back in the day, or Fox, FX, whatever you want to call it. As far as I'm concerned, most of that may be because of torture scenes that probably pushed it too far. But I know in case of Red Sparrow, got quite a bit of flak, mainly because of the rape, sexual assault elements. There's that torture scene where it almost looks like it's implied that man is getting a cheese grating device thing near his balls, You don't see it, but I'm sure it's quite nasty and just really a sort of heavy violence against women, which even Mark Kermode said, "Oh, that was full on." And he usually doesn't bash at 15 films that are quite graphic, but he said this probably would have been best at 18, just like he said with the film Sabotage and Savages, and
Well, again, I
it's good
mean,
setting up all the combat movie recently.
that's that cheese grater probably never seen that could have been cut out in order to attain its 15. Because, like I say, they've already cut the film to get a 15. If more footage was needed to be cut, they probably would have gone further in. After all, they wanted the 15 rating, not the 18. And personally, I don't really have too much of issue with stuff being let go at 15, because at the end of the day, it's a mature audience rating. It's what they let go at U and PG that really should be the eye opener, and they have very much clamped down on what they let through at those ratings. But then again, that's pretty much all. We've exhausted that one to death, because there's not much in the way of espionage films that fall into that fall in those categories, other than like the first Mission Impossible being a PG, and obviously the
Well,
original
I'd like
James
to
Bond films
interject.
prior to.
I'd
Pardon?
like to interject on this one. Your motion, Your Honor. Bang, bang. Johnny English, Looney Tunes back in action. Cars 2. I'm sure the spy comedy, Spy Hard. There were,
Yeah.
well, just to cut
Johnny
people
English.
off a little
I
bit.
was going to forget about them.
Oh, just to cut people off a little bit. For anyone who is curious about my taste for espionage films, most of them are comedies. I've never really been a big fan of the more serious-minded stuff like your Bonds and your Bournes. I've always been more of a fan of, and I get laughed at this, Johnny English, Looney Tunes back in action, The Tuxedo, which is a 12. And Nausicaa's Blitz Tactics, which is an anime that makes me a bit horny. And it's also action-packed. It's 15. And those are all sort of spy comedies or spy spoofs. And then Kingsman. Oh man, how could I forget about talking about that one? But if I talk about it,
I'll forget
you're probably
about it.
going to shut off because I'm going to start talking about that church massacre, which we've talked about to great infinity and beyond. But let's talk about that scene for a second involving if you want to save the world, we could do it in the asshole. That caused a bit of problems too.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of other feminists didn't really like the idea about those sort of like presenting sex to a woman as a reward for a guy sort of saving the world or anything. I mean, there's not much really say about it, but I mean, the only thing, I mean, that film, yeah, I think in both sides of the Atlantic, it had to be toned down to avoid an NC-17/18. But I think a lot of that was footage that was never really included anyway, because I think the church massacre scene was a bit more graphic. But then, yeah, they preemptively found out that it was going to push it into those upper categories, so they left it on the cutting room floor or just deleted it anyway. So pretty much, as in its completed form, the film was released uncut with the R/15 ratings.
Well, from what I was told on the reports, it was the pre-cutting before they said official submission that they had the problems with, where the church massacre and then also the scene where the people's heads are blown off, it was going to be a lot more bloody and just grotesque. But they said, no, make it a little bit more colourful with the clouds of colour flash through there, it's like rainbows, to avoid the 15 in question. I mean, in all fairness, it's the church massacre scene that really pushes the envelope, at least for me, because I know a lot of people, particularly in more conservative countries, think that if you disseminate the church, you're going to have hell to pay. It was even censored in secular countries like China, which
Well, China are
that's
going to
quite
sec, but
telling.
China censored something. Wow, who saw that coming? I mean, yeah, something being, to be fair, if your film hasn't been banned or censored in China, it isn't doing something, it's not doing it right.
Golden Circle had to be, well, that got a bit of flack, but that was fine. That didn't have any censorship issues. I know some people were surprised by the drug use, and then there was that scene where you see Eggsy put a camera up, whoever her name is, up her cooch, which, like for the asshole scene where they do the anal at the very end, that caused a bit of problems, but not on the censorship end, just through backlash.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that was slightly controversial, but I mean, not, but only slightly, not massively. Oh, I mean, as for drug usage, I mean, drug usage at 15 really isn't that big a deal nowadays anyway, unless it's something particularly hard or explicit, like instruction on heroin usage or anything. I mean, I think they tend to just, you can let stuff go at that one, and for the better, really. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the more let go of 15, the better.
I beg to differ.
Well, I mean, we could have a discussion until the cows come home. But I mean, the way I see it, 15 is our equivalent of an R rating, so we should treat it as such. Then again, I'm not saying we should treat the 18 like America treats the NC-17. Rather, I wish it were the other way around.
No. I think we'll be a slippery slope if we let the 18 descend into obscurity, which it already is. I mean, Evil Dead Rise is the only major 18 film that came out this year, aside from Scream 6.
Yeah, well, that's why I said I'd prefer it if it was the way around, like the Americans would treat the NC-17 like we treat the 18.
Oh, sorry. No, I get where you're coming at. My apologies there. But going back to what we were saying, spy comedies usually are my go-to.
Having said that, Mark, because going by the avatar I'm using for today, have you seen the film Spy? Or was it I Spy? I can't remember. It's got Jason Statham in it, but it stars Melissa McCarthy.
Sure I have. I remember seeing it with my mother because she's a fan of Melissa McCarthy. It's a standard 15 at best. A lot more crude humor and sexual dialogue than you would expect in this genre. But I had a good laugh at it, although I don't think it's as funny as one of my all-time favorite spy movies, Grimsby!
I've seen that. That's quite funny as well. Apparently that'd be cut to avoid an 18 due to the scene with the elephant knob.
Actually, this one's a little bit weird because they had to pre-cut it to avoid an 18 because it was too crude. And then in America, they almost threatened it with an NC-17. Based on that scene and also a scene where you see Borat, I like to call him Borat, mind you, sucking off Mark Strong's balls to wipe out the venom. And you see a brief flash of jizz flashing on his eye. I thought that scene, because I have the version, the UK versions, I've seen in both countries, I always found that scene to be quite graphic. I mean, you don't show people putting their mouths near people's genitals at the 15 level. That's a bit of a step too far, even if it is comedic.
Apparently, the first Hangover film had to be blurred out involving a scene involving fellatio to get its 15. So, I mean,
no, that is true. Because I saw it in England, and I was a bit taken aback by, oh, I didn't know you could show that. But in the UK version, they had to put up a blurb or like a black box saying censored, which I thought was quite clever. But in the US, I saw that scene uncut and I thought, that's a bit much. I can't show more sex quite that frankly, even at R. But, everyone slips up every once in a while, even the censors. I mean, I could talk about Austin Powers till the cows come home.
That's a spy comedy.
That's one of the most raunchiest 12 certificate franchises I've ever seen. Maybe I'm wrong on this, but I've always found the Austin Powers movies to be quite rude. But they're funny.
Well, yeah, they did push it quite. Right, I mean, made me realize that the first film was released with a 15 rating, and while it was PG-13 in America, it was edited to get that PG-13, basically with the pussycat bit of dialogue.
And I think there was bits of implied nudity that they had to sort of trim a little bit, because it might have shown a little bit too much pubic hair.
Not that I've seen. Well, I mean, if you go again, go into IMDb and check the alternative versions. That's the only edits that it's registered. I mean, they could have just missed those, but I mean, I'm just going by what I've read. But obviously, Austin Powers is a 12 now, and you could say it's like a bit rude for a 12. But I mean, you know, it's not quite like American Pie level of humor. I think there comes a point where you have to realize, okay, we cut the umbilical cord and everything. This is a yeah, it's a 12 one, and yeah, it does push for boundaries, but that's what boundaries are for, to be pushed. I mean, well, okay, that boundaries and be respected, but of course, I mean, when you like have boundaries, won't accept anyone. You have to test the boundaries so you ultimately know where they are, and of course, that's what films like Austin Powers are for, to just see what can you and what can't you get away within a certain rating. And so, yeah, they decide they all fit in that area, and it's good for filmmakers, and it's good for the audience as well, because the audiences don't get treated like little kids. I'm surprised the whole "fook me, fook you." Oh, your name is "fook me."
No, that was one of the bits I think I said from like the first podcast that we did with Tom, and I was mentioning that, and I thought, yeah, that is a bit on the knuckle there, because it does sound like "fuck." And then also the cutting language jokes. I think maybe it was, you know, number two, that got a bit of flack in the UK. I know in the US where they always like to call us Puritans. You know, we call Americans Puritans, but we look like the Puritans on this one in the aisles because of the word "shagged."
That's because the Americans don't use the term "shag."
Because you were, you know, older than me back in 97. You probably remember all the bit of the flack about the word "shagged" in the sequel, "The Spy Who Shagged Me."
It came out in 99, the sequel did.
Right there. So you would have been at least like 13 or 14. Did they have to blur it out at the cinema posters or something like that when you were growing up?
I don't remember the cinema posters. I just remember when they would show the trailers pre-Watershed, they would always edit over the word "shag." Of course, post Watershed, they would happily leave it in. That's the only thing I can remember. The only difference I can remember.
Because you know, I never had quite that experience with the Austin Powers films because I only saw them on TV. But I know equivalent to that would probably be like "Meet the Fockers" or "Little Fockers."
They weren't actually using the F word, though. They were using like a word that sounded like the F word, a sort of a pun, so they can get away with that.
Oh, yes. Well, it's just from my experience, I always found that quite hilarious. You can get away with certain swear words in titles, and that was sort of tickle my interest in the scene, the movie or whatnot. Inglourious Basterds had the same effect on me, but for me, Spy Who Shagged Me, which I was a bit too young for when it first came out, and then Meet the Farkers, which I did see at the cinema, I was always like, oh, I felt a bit naughty because it had a word that sounded like "fuck" in it. So I always found that quite amusing. So anyone who says you can't say too much in a 12A, turns out you can, but you just might have to be a bit clever with the wordplay. Henceforth,
well, I mean, we talked about King's speech and everything, and there's that whole film, The Duke, which has 5 F-bombs in it, but again, it's going to be getting off topic a little bit. I mean, spy films, of course, there's quite a big back catalogue of spy films to talk about and everything, because they've been kind of just like Westerns back in the oldie days and everything. They were where cowboys were the big go-to heroes of popular imagination. Since the 60s onwards and the height of the Cold War, secret agents became the new folk heroes and everything. Okay, I suppose in the 70s they then went into coppers and everything. And the 80s it was commandos and just assault military people. And don't know who it was in the 90s and everything. I guess it was a bit of a mishmash. It was kind of techno rebel and everything. But until like now it's just pretty much just full on superheroes. And shit, but of course, yeah. But of course, the spy genre has always been the popular one ever since the 60s and everything. Even though the Cold War is long over, I suppose it's given other folk hero, other sort of boogeymen from the fight against. One could say it's quite controversial in a way because it tends to glamorize and idolize and make heroes out of firms such as the CIA and MI6 and everything, which, when you consider some of their sordid activities in the past, you can't help but think, should we really be, again, as I said, idolizing these people and idolizing the firms and organizations and what they do, considering that? I mean, it's not exactly, I take it you know about the history of Iran with Operation Ajax in 1953.
Is it where the US government tried to install like a dictator to favor their interests?
They didn't try to, they did. Both CIA and MI6 staged a coup over there to overthrow the prime minister and install the Shah.
Oh, shit. The US government has always been finding ways to do that through Nicaragua, El Salvador, even Brazil, which has been.
And Chile. Don't forget Chile.
Oh, yeah. Overthrow Salvador Allende. And then we have Pinochet. A lot of these fuckers were sponsored and supported by something called the Chicago School of Economics, which had connections with Milton Friedman to privatize the industry for special business interests. And there's the weird thing. Milton Friedman was more or less a libertarian. He didn't believe the government should have any sort of regulations on the economy. But then to see that it sort of twisted around for sort of neoconservative or even neoliberal gain, frankly upsets me, really. Means, well, I mean, democracy is for sale. It always has been.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, that's what I say. I mean, a lot of these, a lot of these right-wing dictatorships that are around the world in the, during the latter half of the 20th century were installed by the CIA and MI6. And MI6 were one who actually spearheaded Ajax in Iran. Basically, Churchill convinced Eisenhower to get involved because convinced him that Mossadegh was a communist. So, of course, that's put the Shah in power for 26 years until he got a throne. Now, of course, the Iranians, well, they hate America, but really hate Britain for it. And that's probably one thing that the Ayatollah can use to galvanize the people there. There's that one scene, remember, in Quantum of Solace when Bond is talking to Felix Leiter and says, "I always wondered what South America would look like if no one cared about coke or communism. You CIOs have really made this place your..." I can't remember exactly what it says. Really made this place your little backwater or just anything. And of course, there's the whole thing that, Bin Laden, Al-Qaeda or the Taliban are all heavily trained by the CIA. I don't know quite much truth, isn't it? But they did get quite a bit from the American State Department. And I'm not like a conspiracy nut who thinks that the CIA assassinated Kennedy, because that's just bollocks. But I mean, yeah. But they have been, the two firms, they have been doing quite some controversial stuff, underhanded stuff, should we say. And the same can be said for the Soviet Union's KGB as well, or in modern Russia's FSB, and don't get me started on Israel's Mossad.
We could go on for hours with all these shadowy organizations trying to infiltrate a government study to curry in their favor. I mean, from our perspective in history, mostly the Soviet Union or modern-day Russia would often form alliances with their closest countries or former unions. It's mostly Eastern Europe and the West that have been the most heavy-spoken opposers of this front, while the West always likes to finance its allies through trade agreements, and if you don't comply with it, you'll be relegated and you have to do business with Russia, which is what happened with South Africa over recent years, is that once apartheid was disbanded, a lot of special interests more or less decided to leave the country, even though some of them were supportive of breaking away these racial laws. But when the white population started leaving in droves, like Australia, New Zealand, You can pour through it, and now you, Russian influences certainly curtail the country to curry in their favor. And then with China, because they're becoming a growing force because of US reliance on them as a, well, sometimes I get the word export and import confused, but because they build so much to support cheap products that can be sold for the US market, marked up prices, what has happened is that they become stronger for it. They learn more of the technology and the cues, and now they can, like Russia, be the power vacuum that can control countries to curry in their favor, which is what you've been seeing with Hong Kong, which for a long time used to be a British protectorate. But after they left, China proves as a vacuum. So even if you're a small country, you are never free. And even with Brexit, you'll never be free. So I had to go on a political diatribe there for a second. I just wanted to get my words out about political shenanigans of who the world is. It's terrifying time.
It is hard. Well, it is hard not to talk about espionage without having to delve into political issues. I mean, let's face it. Espionage films are going to be political by nature, as hard as they may try not to. There are two other films that I want to talk about. I'm going to start with a more famous one, really. It may not seem like an obvious one, but considering we're talking about ratings issues, have you seen Agent Cody Banks?
I saw that at the cinema. I didn't know it was a PG-rated film in the US. I always thought, oh, it's like PG-13 because it was a 12. But I think that had headbutting.
I think it was an ear clap, well, according to, well, it might be a headbutt, oh, I've read ear clap, had to be cut out of it. And they say an uncut 15 was available. It was like, oh, that's great. So they let, so a film that's released uncut in America with a PG was not only really bumped up a rating here, but still had to be cut. And if it was uncut, it would be in the same category as Bad Boys 2. So yeah, I just find that a little silly. I mean, the film is dated as fuck because it stars Frankie Muniz and Hilary Duff. It's like, wow. Blast in the past somewhat.
Yep, if you're a true millennial, 90s millennial more or less, you will have known those two, particularly from Malcolm in the Middle.
You say 90s millennial?
Yes.
When you say 90s millennial, do you mean someone born in the 90s or someone who would have grown up during the 90s?
Born in the 90s, because Malcolm in the Middle came out in like 99, 2000. And,
yeah, I used to watch it a bit of it.
I used to watch that quite a lot frequently alongside Futurama and Simpsons on Sky One. They would, and Agent Cody Banks I saw mainly because he was in it from that TV show. And I think for the girls, Hilary Duff was on Lizzie McGuire, which I never saw. I never owned Disney Channel. But yeah, about that, that's really bizarre. It's like the whole 12 to 18 theory with the film Every Day, which had the sort of reference or depicted like teen suicide. Yeah, that one I don't quite understand, really. Then again, who does? It's like Top Gun, PG in the US, 15 in the UK. Up until it got a 12A.
Took him long enough. Well, I suppose it was re-released in 1989 with a 12, and then but it took a while for it to get dropped to 12 on video. But it's kind of weird though when you think about it, because not many times that a PG film in America would be rated 12 over here, because it used to be the other way around. PG-13 film gets rated PG here, like the first Mission Impossible. But again, that's a little off topic. The other film I was going to mention, it's based on a TV series. Did you ever watch a TV series? Well, actually, you might be a bit young for it, but I'm going to ask. A TV series called Spooks. It's called MI5 in America.
I'm familiar with it. I just have never seen any episodes. But I always just viewed it as like the British answer to 24. Now, 24 yes. I did see. I don't know if that's espionage, but it deals with counterterrorism. And that was one of the first 15 certificate TV shows I was allowed to watch.
What certificate did you say?
24 is a 15.
Yeah, I was going to say, but yeah, it is Britain's answer to 24, and it's even got like a whole split screen stuff going on. It's a lot less right wing and reactionary. In fact, it's very obvious that people who wrote the Spooks were kind of lefties and liberals and everything as bad guys usually tend to be religious extremists, far rightists. Usually it's like Israeli secret services. And of course, if Americans aren't generally the bad guys, oh boy, they are not portrayed positively. They usually find a way to make a bad guy in Americans, so it's pretty obvious. So yeah, they were but in 2015, was it 2015? I can't remember which year it was now, but I'm just looking up right now.
It's a movie in 2015 called Spooks the Greater Good, which in America they called MI5, which
that was 2015,
I really don't like is when US and UK name certain stuff under certain names differently. It's like the whole Le Mans 66 Ford versus Ferrari thing. It pisses me off. But from what I was told by a certain source, they had to change it to MI5 instead of Spooks because Spooks has a racial connotation to it. And it's like
that's
a slur for
bats.
Which I never really thought of it that way because I've been saying the word spooky ever since I was born.
Well, yeah, but Spook... Well, obviously, it was spooky and everything. It doesn't work. But yeah, the in America, the term spook does have a bit of a racial connotation. But of course, over here, it hasn't. Because it's just generally used for to talk about, either it means, you know, ghost stuff. Or it means a spy. Because like they're called a spook because they're meant to be like a ghost and everything. As if they were never there, they don't exist. And if you think you see one, you didn't. At least that's what it's supposed to be, anyway.
Right.
That's why they did use the term in Burn After Reading, if you've ever seen that movie. Again, because when...
I saw
spoiler alert, when George Clooney shoots Brad Pitt's character, he then searches for his... just through his clothes and everything to find any identification, finds he hasn't got any, and he thinks he's a spy. He said, oh my God, I shot a spook.
Well, it's a bit of a weird one because I've never really heard it being used as a sort of ethnic slur, except for Gran Torino, where he does say, the hell are your spokes up, though? Spokes, get the fuck out of here. Yeah, I've heard spade being used as an ethnic slur. If I was to refer to a black person in a horrible manner, I wouldn't use that word because it doesn't have the same kind of bite. It's not like you would call an Italian or a Greek person a dago, which unfortunately I've been guilty of saying a few times.
Over here, in Britain, dago is aimed at Spaniards.
I've always used it for sort of like, you know, hardline Catholics with chest hair and their surnames are like Iannucci or Spinelli.
In America, it's aimed at Italians, but Britain is aimed at Spaniards. Hence that scene in that episode of Blackadder, in the final episode of the second series. And of course, he's being interrogated by that Spanish interrogator. And he says, no speako dago. I don't know if I should really be saying these words so flippantly, but, well, Spaniards aren't marginalized groups, so there's no privilege or power imbalance being used. So I guess I can run it. I might have to speak to some Spanish people if I ever get a chance to see if that was okay. And if I'm not, I'll have to apologize.
Well, I'll wish it this way because in the US, Hispanic is a separate ethnic category. It's not racial, it's ethnic. And that could be interpreted one or two ways. But in other words, never use Beano Greaser, WAP, or Spick. Just don't. My point. But we'll try to revert back to spy movies and TV shows for a second. I know I mentioned about Cars 2. That is a spy movie. It's a Pixar, a film that a lot of people hate. I actually thought it was better than Cars 1. I've never seen Cars 3. But it got a bit of flat by Joan Graves from the MPA because she was told that Perez did not like the film being rated G. Now, out of all the films that she has seen in her lifetime, the one film that she had a complaint about was Cars 2. Which I still am a bit struggling to understand, but there is a scene where a car is being tortured and its tires are being braced for life and spinning around till it explodes, but we don't see full details. But it is implied it's a torture scene. It's just involving cars, but I thought that's a bit strange. It's like James Furman going on Barry Norman or whoever, talking about Prince of Thieves, Robin Hood, saying, we shouldn't have gave that a PG. I do feel regret about that.
Well, because James Furman said his one regret was giving a PG rating to Prince of Thieves. And you're just there thinking, you gave an uncut U rating to Watership Down. Priorities, maybe?
Well, you know, we've seen Prince of Thieves. It's quite strong. For me, that attempted rape scene was too much. That should not have been a PG.
What's and, 12?
Well, I'd like to sometimes follow by its old ratings because it makes me nostalgic. It's one of the reasons why I still refer to Men in Black. I don't know if it's a spy movie. You can tell me, as a PG film, even though recently it's been re-rated 12.
Well, that's because of it. It was cut for its PG, just like Prince of Thieves was. So, of course, well, that.
I remember, you know, they said, you're insensitive, jerk. But it was actually in the uncut version. I've seen it in America a few times. He said, you're insensitive, prick. That was the scene in question. I remember they had the bit of the beef with which... I mean, out of all the scenes involving sci-fi gore and some quite intense sci-fi violence, I thought you had to pick on the prick and the jerk bit and all the use of shit. I actually got in a little bit of trouble for watching it as a kid, even though they stopped caring about it because of the language, even though I love that movie so much. I don't know if it's a spy movie, you tell me, but it's a personal favourite of mine. One of my all-time favorite films, in the same way that
Men in Black.
Yeah, one and two. Number three is awful.
I don't think Men in Black 2 was all that good, but I do like have quite a nostalgic place in my heart for first Men in Black. That was awesome when it came out. It's still pretty cool now. In fact, considering going by 20th century movies, it's probably one that could be described as one of the few, based on a comic book. It's one of the few 20th century movies based on a comic book that I would describe as good. The other ones being first two Supermans, Batman and Batman Returns, The Mask, and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, first one. Yeah, those were the first only few films from back then based on a comic book that could actually be described as good. And maybe Blade, I don't know. But of course, they kind of managed to perfect the art of converting comic book to movies and actually making them good. So, yeah. Well, make of that what you will.
Well, I'll take your word for it because my experience, especially because you said The Mask, was that I have a fond spot for these sort of old school PG movies that I grew up with that were a little bit on the dangerous side because of some of the violence and language. But I've always enjoyed them nonetheless ever since I first saw them at the cinema or on television, which is why I always have my PG-rated month in the BBFC by my side. Because all my favourite films, my favourite film of all time, which I'm sure you know what it is rated PG.
Oh God, you're going to have to remind me, I can't remember.
You are a toy!
Still no wiser.
To Infinity and Beyond.
Oh, fuck me, it's Toy Story. Yeah, shit, sorry, mate. Penny didn't really drop. I haven't really seen Toy Story much. I may have seen it once or twice, but of course I had no interest in it when it came out.
Well, you were a little bit older, so I understand. And then, you know, spy movies, all my sort of favourite spy movies are either sort of 15 or PG. Like Johnny English, which I think was the first sort of spy movie that I really, really liked. At least the first one. Number two and number three have always been a bit here and there. But I remember, in a modern day context now, because PG is so vanilla, it did catch me a little by surprise when I saw Johnny English Strikes Again, or number three. Because the first minute or two had the word bollocks in it, which in the UK is a bit of a rude word. Not as rude as wanker, but it's quite rude. It's online, same class of shit. I was a little surprised to hear a PG movie nowadays feature the word bollocks in the first minute or two. That caught me by surprise. And then,
I'm surprised by that too. I just suddenly remembered something, because we're going back to the original Mission Impossible film in 1996. I think they were trying to do a lot of that in the late 90s, trying to take something that was based on a 60s spy TV show and make it a film out of it, because the next year, the following year, as I said, The Saint came out, and then the year after that, The Avengers came out, as in not the Marvel stuff, but like based on the Emma Peel stuff from spy show from the 60s.
Actually, I do remember when the I know it's a bit weird talking to Gen Z about The Avengers, because that was the original Avengers. But yes, I remember seeing promos for that. It was not well received. And then The Saint, I only know about maybe because of the theme song, which Orbital remixed, I think, for the purpose of the film, which was...
Sorry, what the hell did you say? Sorry, what did you say now? You didn't catch that.
It was just me humming the theme song from The Saint, which Orbital electronic music remixed. So yeah, that's what was I was trying to do, but just it came across as a little bit weird because of my hay fever, and also sometimes when you do things on a headphone, it doesn't always pick up audio sounds that are a bit more high treble, low bass. Has to admit that middle ground, weird as it may seem, really. But yeah, so I know we've talked a lot about spy movies and TV shows. Exactly, what is your favourite spy movie?
I know you're asking. I have no idea.
Because to me, it probably would be like one of those Jack Ryan movies or Mission Impossible that you saw as a kid or teenager.
Well, I wouldn't say the first Mission Impossible, because I mean, one thing I forgot to add to it was, even though it was like a great, even though it was PG film, I could see, and it was marketed heavily as an action blockbuster, it really wasn't. I mean, it was freaking bloody so damn complicated and convoluted. I sat there at 11 years old watching it. I didn't have a fucking clue what was going on. I mean, the few action scenes that are in the film were used heavily in the marketing campaign. And of course, Mission Impossible got quite an exciting theme tune and everything, but jeez, man. I mean, not only was it incredibly violent for a PG, but I mean, but that didn't bother me because I was 11 and so I'd been really that sort of stuff anyway. I had no, you know, I mean, they was talking in really hushed tones and when explaining what was going on, I just couldn't keep up whatsoever. And so, I mean, I was quite bored throughout most of the film watching it, and I had no clue what was going on. So, yeah, that wouldn't be my favourite. I mean, watching it now, I can appreciate it a bit more because I can follow the plot, even though you still have to listen quite carefully.
I feel that way about Michael Clayton. Having said that, 15.
It was kind of a template of a lot of 90s thriller films that I call fugitive clones, where someone gets wrongly accused of something and has to go on the run, and he has to avoid the authorities and the conspirators in order to clear their name. Because you had Chain Reaction the same year. The previous year, you had The Net with Sandra Bullock, and 2 years after Mission Impossible, you had Enemy of the State with Will Smith. And they all seem to follow the exact same premise. But no, it wouldn't be Mission Impossible. That was my favorite one. I liked Mission Impossible 2 quite a bit, but in retrospect, it's probably not that good. It did a lot to affect my taste in music through the soundtrack. I don't know. I mean, probably it's probably one of the Bond films, but I can't tell you which one, to be honest. I mean, I don't really have a favourite espionage film. Sorry, I'm going to pass on that one.
That's all right there. But I'm sure either one of those films sort of influenced the Evil Busters novels, which you have done.
Yeah.
Which you can find available on Amazon or your local bookstores. But for
I was
going to
bring that up.
But, yeah, well, you're more than welcome to. After all, you can promote yourself on here.
Well, no, I'm just I've written a series of books called The Evil Busters Chronicles, which are espionage-based. How much of it actually follows a typical plot of espionage and deals more of just, it sends more into action, adventure, thriller type stuff. But yeah, the characters are supposed to be secret agents, and which kind of follows that whole typical trope of teenagers becoming secret agents. But kind of deviates a lot of it, where it's a lot more adult oriented. Available on Amazon, available, you can download on Kindle, make them more. Yeah, and if you do, thank you, and I hope you enjoy them.
This has been a public service announcement from Robert J. Bavister. We present you the latest and greatest in literature. No, but in all fairness, I have read it myself, and he could very well be the next Tom Clancy, with a little bit of dash of Trey Parker and Matt Stone in terms of the comic banter every now and again. Now, speaking on that element, I was almost going to say Team America World Police, but I know that's not a spy movie. That's more of a sort of animated puppet, action, comedy, war, whatever you want to call it. So I'm going to skip that one. But as far as his favourite spy movie is concerned, in all fairness, I've never really been a big fan of the Bond movies, even though I could talk to the cows coming about Casino Royale and how that scarred me, in the same way that Paul Bettany whipping himself scarred me. I mean, there was maybe a little bit of worry in the house I was going to turn gay simply for watching the scene where James Bond gets his testicles whipped, but I've never had fantasies about that, in the same way I've had fantasies about Nausicaa and Leela from a particular anime spy work that I used to watch, fighting Humorites. It's a 15 step get animation I used to watch. And it was one of these given that rating because there was a lot of shots of women's underwear. And it's so frequent and so blasé, you have to miss the one if you're guilty of watching pornography.
I mean, there's a lot to unpack there, to be honest, Mark. I mean,
and then I'll reel it back in. It's actually probably Johnny English 1 or Looney Tunes Back in Action, which I can always have a good laugh at. And also features Timothy Dalton.
But it's sort of a spy film, isn't it? I've only seen it once, so I can't really comment on it. I do like the Johnny English films. At least the first one was incredibly funny.
Anyone of any age can enjoy it, really. It's quite vanilla British humour. Very much so.
I always had a bit of a... looking back at it, I've got a bit of a... not a huge gripe, but... bit of concern for that movie, because much like the film Master and Commander Far Side of the World, these are two films released in 2003 with British good guys and French bad guys. Oh, that doesn't half make me think.
Oh, sorry, I sounded a bit weird there, but yes, it all plays on the whole sort of 1940s era type comedy where you'd see, it's like Dad's Army in a way, where we'd hear jokes about French or German people held at the expense of the British. Oh, look at them frogs, they're trying to get us there. Isn't that right, Sarge? I don't know if Americans or Canadians or Russians will get it, but I know the easiest way to solve the film, and this goes even with Looney Tunes Back in Action, was to focus on the slapstick and a sort of physical comedy, which Rowan Atkinson is very much known for, and he certainly uses it to his advantage in Johnny English 1 and Mr. Bean's Holiday. I know it's a bit weird to say I like Rowan Atkinson's movies. I like Mr. Bean than I like Black Adam more, because it's a bit more, I kind of get it a little bit more. Black Adam is a bit too niche for my liking. No offense. Don't deport me from the UK because I don't like Blackadder. But yes, if
I don't
anyone's
think
curious.
anyone's going to deport you just for not liking Blackadder, Mark. I mean,
Well, I mean, I like Alan Partridge. That's about as British as you can get. Oh, look at me. I have Melton Mowbray. Oh, I've got a bit
the
of a
only,
part of the old bitter.
I only say you're only properly British if you like Bottom.
Well, I might have lost you on that one there because I'm an Alan Partridge or Chris Morris or In Between Us
Yeah.
fan.
Alan Partridge is Alan Partridge is cool. He's funny as a character, and of course, it's always his type of character or person is, yeah, his type of person that or demographic or what, I don't know what term you want to use here. That the James Bond films are generally traditionally appealed to.
No, you're right. It's sort of a middle-aged sad sacks who either with their wives or maybe divorced and feel like, oh, I'm reliving all the good days with my
And a
coffee
bit of
and
a,
octopussy, live and
and
let die.
a rather conservative, what you might call, yeah, welcome Middle England, and everything. Probably a bit of a Daily Mail reader and everything all. And without getting too political, probably would have voted Brexit.
No, actually, I would agree with that assessment. I'm sure many Tories can sort of claim as James Bond in their as their own, in the same way that Americans can claim Chuck Norris or
Or Jack Bauer.
hell, even Tom Cruise flying planes in Top Gun as their own, because it's so America. It makes you feel proud. You makes you want to have a steak and some Budweiser.
Bud
I'm
Light.
sure.
Well, they wouldn't Bud Light anymore now, would they? But that's a topic for another. Well, we've already covered that topic.
But yes, James Bond is as British as Melton Mowbray's Yorkshire puddings and a part of the old bitter with some mutton chops. And
And the football riot.
oh,
Don't get much more British than that.
absolutely, and vomiting on the streets and telling people in France and Germany, I don't speak French. Can you speak English?
Yeah.
God, we look
Or I'm just
uncultured.
saying, and singing two World Wars, one World Cup, doo-dah. Although it's more specifically English, no, not British, because the one World Cup doesn't apply to the Scots of a Welsh.
Exactly. I'm sure. I know we're getting off topic here. You being in Wales or Cymru, you probably get shit for being an Englishman sometimes from your Welsh friends. Like, oh, but you think you're going to have 1966 all over again? But then they lost the football and they called the black players all this and all that when they lost. Or, oh, because you're a Brexit supporting.
Well, I didn't support Brexit anyway. I voted Remain.
No, I'm saying
But
you probably
yeah,
get shit for
obviously,
being English.
funny enough, it's not that extreme. It only just gets a little tense during the Six Nations, or any during time there's a rugby match going on. It got a little tense maybe during the 16 Euros when it was England versus Wales. But it's mostly during the rugby it gets a little intense. But once that's gone, it's done, and no one cares.
I'll take your word for it. I'll take your word for it. But I think we might have to pack this in. I think we probably said our piece there. I mean, we could talk about License to Kill because I know we hinted at it. Just to for everyone's curiosity, it was 15. They did have to cut out stuff even to get a 15, but now it's a 15 uncut. They even had to do it in the US, although. As in the US, I did see where it said PG-13 on the back of the DVD, and the version that I saw was actually uncut, despite saying PG-13, which I thought was a
That's
little bit
because
weird.
in, well, that's because there's no legal obligation to put the ratings on the put the ratings on the cassettes in America, whereas in Britain that's actually mandatory. That's
It's
that's
legally
why.
binding.
Yeah.
But I always just found that a little bit funny, really, because I'm sure if young people nowadays saw that scene where the bird's head is exploding in a pressure chamber, they probably have nightmares. I mean, I saw it when I was much older, when I must have been like 28 or 29. But yeah, blimey. I mean, it's actually one of my favorite, it's actually my favorite James Bond movie, if anyone asks. I think
And
Timothy
it's
Dalton
quite,
is a
it is
genius.
one of the most exciting ones. Yeah, it is one of the most action-packed ones. It doesn't feel so much like a Bond film. It feels more like just a typical 80s action movie. I mean, the fact that he used a Colombian drug dealer or a South American drug dealer was pretty much telling it on the nose. You know, that was the last James Bond film of the Cold War. But I guess by that point, they felt it was winding down, and it was on its to an extent that they couldn't use the KGB or the Soviets as the bad guys anymore. Although they tend to avoid doing that anyway. In fact, the reason why Ian Fleming created Spectre, because he thought the Cold War wasn't going to last long enough for that to be a for that to for the Soviet Union to be useful as an enemy for Bond. So he thought it would create an apolitical one that would have more lasting power. And while he was kind of wrong about the Cold War not lasting towards the end of, not may, lasting to the end of the 60s, I mean, obviously nowadays it's a bit more relevant now that the Soviet Union has been dead for 30 years and the Cold War is, well, I'm not even old enough to remember it, so let alone you weren't even born when it finished. So, I mean,
I mean, I only
but yeah,
know about
cramped a bit.
Mr. Gorbachev tear down this wall from what my mother's told me. How sad is that? Although I did meet some Romanian people who fled Romania because of the dictatorship. So take that as you will.
Okay, will do. Yeah, but I mean that's pretty much. But yeah, I mean, I'll be honest here. We got into about License to Kill, and that's quite a. Yeah, it's quite a. That was quite an exciting one. Obviously, Robert Davi has always been a great '80s action bad guy, so that was always fun. It's a pity Timothy Dalton never got any further with Bond, but I suppose he was never going to. He didn't. He lacked the smooth and suave elements that would have made a decent Bond. He was always a little too hard sounding. So yeah, but nonetheless, that's yeah. I suppose we kind of wrap that up, really, haven't we?
I would say so myself. I mean, on some level, here's my theory. You wouldn't have Daniel Craig if you didn't have Timothy Dalton, because both of the actors in question come from the more hard-edged elements of Bond.
Well, that's true. That's true. I mean, one say that his version of Bond was a little ahead of its time, that the world wasn't ready for yet. Obviously, in the mid 2000s, with like people with things like 9/11 and the Iraq War happening, and people feeling a lot of disillusionment with like the feel good time of the 90s, especially in America, people were kind of moving away from that sort of what can I say? People felt a bit more cynical as such. I mean, just like with Batman Begins in 2005, Casino Royale in 2006 was kind of fitting for the mold. But yeah, that's my take.
Fair enough. I'm more than happy to have you on board, and discussing all these films, which, sorry.
Yeah, well, I don't know what did you apologize for?
My nose was blocked with some phlegm, so I apologize there. But I'm very happy to
Not
have
too
you on
much.
board, and
Yeah, always happy to be here.
about these films and TV shows whenever we can. And I'll leave you to do what you have to do. I'm going to go ahead and watch Nausicaa's Blitz Tactics again. And then Freddy got fingered.
You enjoyed. I'll just say this podcast will self-destruct in, I don't know, 5, 10 seconds. I mean, it'll self-destruct over a certain amount of time anyway.
Is not the BBC test system.